Hello and welcome to Sexopedia. I'm your host, Sarah. And in today's episode, we're tackling a topic that both important and often difficult. Well, how to talk to teens about sex education. I'm excited to be joined by Tim and Toshi, the founders of Sex in Space. Today, we're going to discuss the vital subject of sexuality and how we can better communicate with young people about sex, relationships, and consent. Tim and Toshi, thank you both for being here today. It's great to have both of you join us. Would you mind giving our audience a brief introduction about yourself?
So I'm Toshi, and I'm part of the Sex in Space project. So it's a project all about sex education. We've got our own podcast called Sex in Space. We've got a couple of books as well, The Organ Education Forgot and How to Talk with the Kids About Porn. And so I kind of oversee a whole bunch of that stuff. And do a lot of work with the podcast, especially.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Tim. Been with Sex in Space since it's, I'm its resident, straight, white, cisgendered, married, boring person. same thing, really. We're all here to learn heaps more than we missed out on at school, really.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you guys. So, I always have this kind of question because, you know, when we're talking about pornography and teenager, The association is usually quite sensitive. So why do you think it's very important, like, to introduce pornography to them in a really scientific way?
Yeah, well, so the reason that we wanted to write this specific book was because we were looking at the stats around when young people are seeing porn, and so the average age is 11. And one study done where I think it was 75% of parents thought that their kids hadn't seen pornography, and over half of them actually had. So are seeing it when they're very young. Obviously, even though 11 is the average age, sometimes they are seeing it when they're younger. And there's a whole bunch of problematic, you know, themes within pornography. And if people aren't aware of how to kind of come to that with an educated understanding, it can be hard to differentiate between, you know, watching pornography and going, is this what I'm actually expected to do? Is this what I should be doing in my own sex life, in my relationships? So that's why we chose to write the book, was to be able to give parents the tool they need to have those conversations with young people. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, please go.
I was going to say, in all of the sort of research that we did, it really is the default for sex education because, there is obviously formal sex education in schools, and they do cover a broad range of topics. Certain countries are better than others, blah, blah, blah. But, kids are really turning to the internet and then discovering porn as that sort of default, like, oh, what am, like, to answer all their questions, basically. And it's just not a very good educational tool, really, unless you're equipped to understand it, and it's got some nuance and context around what it is you're actually watching and that sort of stuff.
Right. Yeah. And especially, it's pornography and it's performance. So a lot of time the images is just not, let's say, not natural. Well, so what do you guys think are the effective ways, like probably parents or, you know, as elderly, we can use, you know, to introduce this kind of culture to the kids around us?
Framed this book in terms of, like, it's not just one conversation about porn, it's part of a lot of conversations about sex education. And so it's kind of about creating an environment within your family, or even just in general in terms of your friends, people that you're surrounded with, about being comfortable to talk about sex and sexuality and have those conversations in a shame-free way and just making it something that's sort of quite normal, and so that there's no sort of feelings of taboo, like kids can't bring those things to their parents and have conversations if they do come across something that they feel uncomfortable with, or that they, you know, feel like they shouldn't have seen online, then they feel like they can come and speak to their parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really dovetails into a broader topic, which we've actually not been looking for, but come across quite often in doing our own podcast, is especially when it comes to kids, obviously all family dynamics are different, and so people will approach this in their different ways. But you trying to foster from a pretty early age a sort of family dynamic where your kids can come to you when they have questions, when they have problems. And a lot of that can involve, particularly for people my age, a fair amount of upskilling, because I'm in my 40s now, and so I grew up in a pretty minimal tech sort of teenage kind of time. So I didn't have mobile phone, you know, access to the internet, all that kind of stuff. And now my kids are coming to me with, you know, problems that are new to me. So I'm having to upskill, and that's fairly common theme, is that parents really don't know, you know, they're not up to speed with what their kids are perhaps looking at, or what devices they're on, or internet safety, all this kind of stuff. And so upskilling yourself as a parent is super important, but also creating that sort of environment where your kids are, you know, going to feel like they can approach you to talk about stuff, and maybe you can have to learn together with them. But you know, that was pretty important, and we've come across that quite often.
Yes. And we found, like, a lot of times, especially when I was in as a teenager, and I came from like a quite conservative family, it's really hard for my parents to do the talk when they found out that I start to enter puberty. And right, it makes these conversations really tricky and awkward sometimes, but at the end of the day, we know it's something natural. Is there any like tricks, like how they can, you know, cut to the chase with the kids?
The things which we wrote about is sort of using, I guess, teachable moments. So maybe if you're watching a film or a TV show and something comes up that you feel like you could, you know, use it as a talking point to kind of jump off of with your kids, that could be quite helpful. Or also not necessarily making it like a sit down conversation. Maybe if, you know, you're driving a kid to school and you just sort of bring it up, so you're sort of sitting next to each other but not facing each other, and you're in the same space, so it's not as confronting to have those kinds of conversations, or to quite helpful tips.
Yeah, just make it casual and not that intense. Right. So what I still have, like, these questions, because I think sex education is very important, but there is still a voice that out there saying, you know, it's natural in us, and we should be knowing like how to do this. But why do you think sex education is very important?
The research that we've done, we know that when young people get good sex education, it delays the age of sexual debut, so they start having sex later on. There's less adolescent pregnancy and STIs. There's people who are more likely to be using contraception, condoms. So I think when you look at those kinds of research, it kind of shows why and how it can be so effective to have good access to good sex ed.
And there's a lot that we would consider to be missing from a fairly standard sort of sex ed thing as well. One of the books we wrote, the first book that we wrote, was a little book about the clitoris, because, you know, there was some relatively new information and research being done on it. There was some was an MRI scan, like 3D imaging, the clitoris, and, you know, it's actually this, like, much bigger, more intricate and involved and important organ than people would, or, you know, that a lot of people sort of know about. And so that was one thing that hasn't really caught up in sort of a more mainstream education. And then also that, because awkwardly for a lot of people, that conversation leads on to a conversation about pleasure, and that's something that a lot of sex education, they don't go anywhere near that either. It's very much like about, you know, contraception or procreation or whatever, that kind of stuff. But actually, the pleasure conversation, the consent conversation, all of these things, the more formal sex ed, government-run stuff is really playing catch-up. And that's where you can really see a lot of the benefits, you know, from including that stuff in a sex education as well. Although we've always said that the formal one isn't the only one, like, because of podcasts like ours and yours and the content that a lot of people do put out, even for me myself, you don't have to stop learning. It's not that it just has to happen at school, you know, in that awkward week when the boys go one way and the girls go the other way. Of course, it can happen, you know, for anybody at any age, you know, anybody can just keep learning and all the time. So that's essentially why we're in existence, is that we just wanted to have more conversations about sex and bring those to people.
Right, perfect. Like, where are you guys based at this moment?
Auckland, New Zealand.
Oh, okay. I always have this question. Like, so when I watch tons of like entertainment stuff, like movies, films, we can see a lot of times Western culture, we romanticize sex. While on the other hand, there are people who's having a quite like open-minded about this concept. Well, they're also like teenagers. They're inclining, having this tendency of early exposure to pornography or sex, or even they got higher risks than ever of being a sex addict because of the culture party, the hookup culture, so many things. So in some ways, the culture is justifying the, let's say, the abuse of sex actions. Well, on the other hand, there are people like you doing the sex education. So, yeah, I'm quite curious, are there any difficulties along the way?
One for us is being able to put this kind of information like on social media. We are shadow banned on places like TikTok and Instagram. It's really hard because a lot of this content will get flagged as violating community guidelines. And I know that's something that a lot of other sex educators face as well. I know that there was the Come Curious podcast, which just had their YouTube account actually like completely taken down I think yesterday. So that's been one of the biggest challenges, is being able to, create content and then have it be able to reach the right people and get it seen without it being banned online.
Like how? Because I know all of your like content is about sex education. It's nothing like actually, nothing actually really close to adult entertainment. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's just, you know, keywords pop up, you know, the type of
Gotcha.
content, yeah, that we might be talking about sometimes. Yeah, tried to navigate that. It's weird, and I can kind of see why, you know, Meta or TikTok would have those sort of policies in place, but it is frustrating. Yeah.
It is. And like other questions I really have about this whole thing engaging with teenagers, that have you guys like done consulting like sessions with them? Have you ever like met some of them in person and let them know about the whole system that you're creating about sex education?
To some about the clitoris book, when that was released. We actually launched on Instagram first before we did anything else. That was pre-podcast, pre-books. And our age range on there is, yeah,
It's younger, I would say. Yeah.
it's younger than we thought, younger than us anyway. Which is good and interesting. Because of actually specifically, no.
Yeah, I think it's quite like a I, that's how to say it. I think it's an act of virtue, or it's quite glorious act for you guys to pick this tract, because if you're picking like talking about sex education for adults like ED, probably it's much easier for you guys to get your content seen. But I'm just curious, like, how did you guys get started? Why sex education, and why it has to be related to teenagers? What motivates you to, like making it a job and then making a career, eventually come up with books?
Always a side hustle initially. We were a design and branding agency. The this was a sort of it was a research project initially that we that was done by one of our founders, but that was ages ago. And that was much more about the sort of sex ed, good sex ed, and around porn and those sorts of things. And so she had these ideas percolating in her head for a bit, and when COVID happened, we had a little bit of time up our sleeves to really kind of push this and launch the podcast and really put some sort of time behind it. And yeah, it's kind of grown from there really. And I think, yeah, strategically, we always wanted to be quite broad with who we talk to, and we do talk to everybody, but with the books specifically, we wanted them to be very, very accessible and reach that kind of parent teen kind of crossover area.
Yeah. So do you have any like advice for parents that are they're dealing with teenagers? Because teenagers, they are like on the edge of growing up, and also on the other hand, they became quite sensitive. You can barely say anything to them. So how do we communicate? How do we get this started?
Were a teenager more recently than I was.
I think one of the main takeaways from writing the book, How to Talk with Your Kids About Porn, was if kids have a fear of punishment, then they're less likely to be open with parents. And so I think that kind of having made it, clear that, like, if they're in trouble or if they've seen something, they can come in and express it to a parent without fear of having their phone taken away or having their, internet, up at a certain time or losing access to that. Because obviously right now, it's phones in the digital world is hugely important in a teenager's life. So I think it's just about making sure that they know that no matter what happens, like they're not going to be punished for seeing something, which I mean, a lot of kids will see content like that accidentally. So, I think they just need to feel safe.
God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in a lot of ways, I think it's all about sex, but it's also not all about sex itself, because a lot of times we talk about how should we introduce this to teenagers, but in the US, like a lot of times when it comes to sex, it's often impacted by different culture and religions. For example, for Christians, if there is this implication, they're saying if you watch porn, then it could be something sinful, and because you're indulging lust. And they're also Islamic family, they probably wouldn't allow early sex actions before like 18 or before they're becoming an adult. So there are also like Asian families who does not allow this like before they're entering their adulthood. So when we're talking about this, a lot of times we're talking about how to introduce this to teenagers. But sometimes the parents it themselves are deeply impacted by their like previous education institution. So yeah, how do we, like talk to the parents, like make them think, hey, it's worth the while to talk to your kids about sex ed.
Yeah, I think that's very important. And there's a lot of good books already out there, and a lot of content. And I think just to start to, yeah, look at your own the own gaps in your own education, maybe your own issues around shame and that kind of stuff. Because yeah, it really can just be passed right on to your children from a pretty early age, actually. I had a really interesting conversation with on the podcast with a lady called Dr. Tina Shermer Sellers, who wrote a book called Shameless Parenting. And she was talking about how, from such an early age in certain families, quite unintentionally, people can really foster a culture of shame around, maybe even like a 2-year-old touching themselves quite innocently. You know what I mean? And so, and all that is intergenerational shame that's been passed down, by parents to other parents, and it just kind of becomes this self vicious cycle. But it's such a human thing for a small child, maybe they're under 2 years old, to be touching their genitals. Like that's fine. And as a parent, you can say, hey, if you want to do that, like maybe we don't do that at the dinner table, or maybe you want to do that in your bedroom instead of in front of the television. But a lot of parents will come down so hard and so sort of fiercely and angrily on children when they do that, that the child suddenly associates this thing that feels very natural and very human, just as human as, you know, hugging your mum or dad or, you know, anything else that kids do, with this like extreme reaction of like punishment. And that's how the sort of the shame cycle can sort of start. So, yeah, I think it's really important for parents to really do the work on themselves before.
Right, exactly. Well, in retrospection, when I look back to my teenagehood, well, it's all about schools and friends. Well, my parents, I'm from a typical like Asian family. Like, all they ask for is for you to have good grades. You go to a, like, you know, high-ranked college, something like that.
Yeah.
So when it comes to sex, it's usually on the bottom of the, you know, topic list. So could you please send out the message here? Like, explain to the parents why this thing is so important in our life, not only for teenagehood, but, you know, all along to the way until we enter the tomb.
I think we've talked quite a lot about those three things that you just brought up there. So you got your formal education, your parents, and then also your kind of wider culture, you could call it your friend group and stuff like that. And yeah, like, really, it's this, it's a trifecta, right? There's a bit in the middle, which is you, and all of those things come into play when it comes to your sort of sex education. And I think even teenagers that are, you know, engaging with this kind of content, they've probably got a lot they could teach their parents, to be honest. You know, and I think that's it's different from my upbringing when I was in a, you know, 15, 16, 17. There was no internet, and so, you know, there wasn't as much information, but it was the same. I mean, I think I really got a lot from my friends and, you know, peer group. Because I couldn't Google it.
All right. So what other questions I have about this whole thing is when you guys are dissecting sex education, besides the formal one and the casual one, are there any sites you'd like to share with us?
Many.
So many.
But bring it on. Just name a few for me.
Who's been our most like impactful guests?
Kath Hackinson's site, Sex Ed Rescue, is great. And she's got a whole bunch of resources on there, divided into depending on what age your kids are. Justin Hancock has one called bish.co.uk, so B-I-S-H, and that's for ages 14 plus.
Yeah.
So those are really good resources.
There's a really good, another one in the UK, the School of Sexuality Education. They were on the podcast a while back under a different name. They've since rebranded, but they've released a really good book as well. And they're pretty, pretty much aimed at, you know, secondary school, teenage kind of space. For the parents, Dr. Tina Shermer-Sellers was really, really good.
Hamilton as well in Australia. She's got a site called Talking the Talk, Healthy Sexual Education. Lots of great resources there.
Those three books, what was her name? Melissa Kang.
And Dr. Yumi Hines, I think they're together. They've written three.
There's
Welcome to Sex, Welcome to Your Period,
and Welcome to Boo. They're really good books. They're books that we sort of not modeled on, but their approach is a little bit similar, where it's like a book that you could pick up or put down and like read with your children if you wanted to. Like, it's you know, one that you could engage with together and learn a lot. I think they're also doing Welcome to Consent as well, aren't they?
Great. Well, thank you for sharing. So, well, one thing that's quite often in like adolescence is that, you know, when kids enter puberty, their body starts to change, especially for girls. Like, we grow boobs, we probably gain a little bit weight on the side. So there's always an association between sex and body shaming. Well, could you please elaborate more on this one for us?
it's interesting content which I've engaged with. I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of, especially if you're getting your sex ed from porn, and there's a lot of like, expectation and on some of the the common threads in porn, maybe that, all vulvas have got no hair on them, or and it's that kind of stuff. There was some really interesting one we have interviewed, another one we haven't. There's one called Comfortable in My Skin. It's got a vulva diversity gallery. She's got one for penises as well, actually, but she's a photographer, and she's released a book of photographs that she's taken of huge range of people. She's traveled the world, taking pictures of their vulvas, basically. And you will look through her photographs. The porn myth is of like that expectation that all vulvas have to be, neat and hairless and all the rest of it. It just evaporates because suddenly you realize, like, oh, I'm normal because, there's such a range, there's such a diverse range out there. And that was quite interesting. And the penis one as well was the same. It was like blew apart kind of any expectations or sort of that you have around, yeah, am I normal? It's like, of course you are. Of course you are. The diversity is infinite. And so that's quite good for people to know if they've only been exposed to porn, and then they're like, oh, okay, every penis has to be 9 inches long, all the hairless. That was quite interesting.
I love the way how Tim put it. Like he's saying, teenagers always have this question about, am I normal? So I have this very experience because I came from a quite conservative family, and as I just mentioned, sex is usually something not something we would talk about. So when I entered college, and at first, and it was until I entered college, it was the first time that I used tampon. So when the first time that I put it in, it hurts so much. But because I lack of this kind of education, so I just had a lot of assumption about myself. Like, am I normal? Like, am I just, am I like, having certain of illness, or is my vulva different from other people's vulva, and why my like vulva is so like hairy, and why it looks different from those one that I watched on Pornhubs. So that's like a really great way, a great way to put it, because a lot of times teenagers, we do have this concern. And because we were teenagers at that time, we have this something we call like self-esteem. And that cuts us from a lot of like open communication. It's, well, I barely, go hang out with my friends overnight so they don't see my body and something like that. So, do you guys like have anything to say for teenagers like me when I was back in high school?
For me, I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, it's different to my upbringing, but the analogy's still pretty good. Is that you wouldn't watch, say, The Fast and the Furious, and then go, okay, there's the keys to the car, teenage child. Like, you know how to drive now. Out you go, right? And you wouldn't watch, I don't know, any insert another analogy there, but like, that's kind of what porn is doing. Is it's like you're watching this thing, it's not real. Like, sure, they're having sex, but in terms of the expectation of reality versus what you've seen is can be pretty far apart. There's another site called Make Love Not Porn, which is you had Cindy Gallup on the podcast before. It's porn, but it's a lot of it's by women, so there's a real focus on sort of a bit more narrative, a bit more reality. It's not just like, come on a face as quick as you can kind of thing. There's more focus on pleasure. There's a lot of focus on kind of actual true couple interaction, so the people are actually, sexual partners in real life. And they don't kind of edit out any of the mistakes either. So it gives you a real view into like, okay, can we pause for 30 seconds while I get a drink of water? Or, maybe there's a squelching sound here or there, or maybe like you, it's not all like perfectly directed, it's much more sort of real. And that was the aim with why Cindy started that whole thing. And she was just like, I want to show real as opposed to, So that was an interesting one. Really. Advice to teenagers.
I think just like conversations can be so helpful, and I think a lot of the time, if you were to bring something up with a friend that you trust and you feel like you can have a conversation with them about it, people are quite willing to be open about those things, and maybe you'll find your friend also is wondering the same thing, and so together you can have a discussion. If you feel confident bringing that with your friends, then I think it is worthwhile doing so.
Thank you, guys. So, are there any like future plans that you guys are having?
Guests on the podcast, I guess.
Okay,
Yeah.
so if some of our audience would like to follow you, would like to follow you guys on social media or follow your podcast, where should they be? Like, where should they reach you?
Instagram, we are sexandspace.com, so that's DOTCOM. Or we've got a website which is www.sexandspace.com.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Tim and Tasha. It's really a great pleasure talking to you guys. And thank you for the great work of like teenage sex education. Everything's perfect. Thank you, guys.
Thank you
All
so much.
right. Thanks. All right, you guys can feel free to leave the meeting. I'll take care of everything and I'll send you an edited version after I get everything done and it's published. That's all right.
Amazing.
Perfect.
Sounds
All
good.
right, perfect. Yes, great.
Thank you so
Hey
much.
guys, thank
See you
you. Yeah, thank you for coming.
later.
Yay. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sexopedia. If you're interested in exploring more topics related to us, the adult industry, sex education, and relationship issues, please check out loveneso.com. We have a wealth of information and resources that will satisfy your curiosity. Stay tuned for more captivating stories. Until next time.